Welcome to Influential Entrepreneurs, bringing you interviews with elite business leaders and experts, sharing tips and strategies for elevating your business to the next level. Here's your host, Mike Saunders.
Hello and welcome to this episode of Influential Entrepreneurs. This is Mike Saunders, the Authority Positioning Coach. Today we have with us Bill Fairman, who's the co-founder of Carolina Capital Management. Bill, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Mike. I appreciate you having me on.
You are welcome, and I'm excited to talk to you because I always love talking to new people, learning about their experiences and all the lessons that they learned to make them successful, and I'm confident that you're going to have some wonderful insights to share. So get us started with a little bit of your background. What has your entrepreneurial journey been like to this point in your career?
Well, by the way, thank you so much for thinking I'm a new person. Because of my age, I appreciate that thought.
I'm right there with you.
I frankly have had quite a long journey, and we'll get into that in a little bit. But I got into the financial world in 1989. My father-in-law, I originally was in the dental laboratory business. My father-in-law said he owned a mortgage company and said, "That would be a great career for you." And I said, "Really, why is that?" And he said, "Because you have a personality." And I went, "Wow. Is that all it takes?"
Is that good? Right.
And fortunately, I had an acumen for the numbers, and it was easy for me to take the complicated and make it simple for the end user. So it worked out really well.
So your father-in-law guided you in that direction. So that's awesome.
Yeah. And he did a great job with that business as well. He'd been in financial services for 20 years. He was a retired Air Force air traffic controller. He used very few words. When you're an air traffic controller,
yes,
spend a lot of time on the radio talking. You get the important stuff out and then shut up.
Yes, exactly. Because the more you talk, the more chance that something has to go wrong. And, you know, I spent some time in the mortgage industry back in the day, and I remember one thing that I was told by my manager: when the underwriter asks for certain conditions, you send them just those things, nothing more, nothing extra, because who knows what Pandora's box can open up. So it really is a life lesson too. Clarity equal and brevity equals good, clear communication. So that's a great business tip for us, right?
Absolutely. Yes. If you tend to wind on in your communication skills, sometimes you come up with things the other person doesn't want to hear.
Yep. Or doesn't need to, right? Or just get you off track. Yeah. So I'm sure that being into the your own business, owning businesses and different nuances and variations of that, you know, different maybe industries or you know, pivots here and there, I'm sure that you've had just the hockey stick trajectory and had nothing but perfect success. You know, of course, we're being facetious, but talk a little bit about some of the failures or even breakdowns in, you know, your path to success that you've experienced. Whether it's business or personal.
Are you trying to say that it's not all rose-colored glasses out there in the room?
Well, I'm definitely saying that because I think too many times, truthfully, people think, "Oh, look at my friend runs this business and he can go off and do all these things and I'm going to start my own business." And they only look at that, you know, after the 30 years of hard work, that overnight success. And I know that we're being, you know, funny, but in reality, boy, we've got to look at mom and dad and go, "Hey, you spent 30 plus years getting this stuff. I need to work hard." And you look at that successful business owner and they spent a lot of time learning lessons and having mistakes. So yeah, there are those stops and starts and backwards and taking one step back to get two steps forward. So what were some of those in your experience?
Well, initially in the mortgage business, everything was going wonderfully. I spent 11 years at this company that my father-in-law owned. He ended up cashing out, and the company was sold to another company. And at that point, I decided that, you know what, I'm going to go out on my own here and do something similar, but do it on my own. And I cashed out my 401k to start this business, and I hired someone that I trusted, who apparently I shouldn't have trusted, and within a year I had to shut it down.
Oh, no.
So that was the first thing. But You know, the mortgage business was great in the 2000s, as you know, in the early 2000s. And so it was easy for me to, you know, get back up on that horse. But, you know, in those businesses and most of my adult life, I've either been commission only or self-employed.
Yeah.
And you learn over time that you don't spend a bunch of money when you get it. And you know, there's going to be times when you're going to need it. So you still live life conservatively, because it can be a roller coaster, especially in the sales side of things. And, you know, the mortgage business itself is very cyclical. You know, in 2008, we had that big crash, but over time, there's always been ups and downs, and it's usually based on, you know, interest rate rises and then the occasional recessions. But in the long run, real estate is always the best investment, I believe, over time, because it's always going to go up in value. And we'll talk about that in a little bit.
Yeah.
But you have to, when you close a company down, it's
a punch in the gut.
Humbling to admit that you failed. Now, in this case, I had somebody that I didn't trust, so I could have just blamed it on her. But in truth, I allowed it to happen. So,
what are some aspects of that without getting into details or whatnot? But if you could go back and do it again, or what lesson in there that now when you approach another colleague or strategic alliance, what are some now checks and balances that you learned from that that you'll put into place?
Yeah, it's the old Ronald Reagan thing, trust but verify.
Yep.
And I wasn't doing enough verifying.
Got it.
And that's really what it boils down to. You just have to. Yeah, I believe you. Let me see it and let me keep seeing it.
Yeah. Well, that's a great, wonderful lesson. And and you said that this person came recommended, or they were a friend, or you're familiar. So it wasn't like you got cold called and fell for something. So you checked, it checked out, but then, okay, now the lesson is, let me verify. Let me double check. Let me do my due diligence. And so those are some wonderful business lessons. So what next? When you kind of get in now to starting your business, what are some other business lessons that you had to learn on your path to success?
Well, this is a business lesson, and it's a lesson in the specific industry that we're in too. You know, we underwrite and we make loans to real estate professionals, and I have been involved in thousands of mortgage transactions. And every time I think I've heard it all, I hear something else.
Yeah.
So I've seen every sort of scenario. People will make up stuff. And again, in everything that you do in life and in business, you know, trust but verify. The young lady that, excuse me, I ended up having to close down for, she was very good, but at some point, she had a mind shift, and, it happens. People change sometimes. So
Sure. You
just have to make sure that you continue to do your due diligence. Even if you've had a long term relationship, even if that relationship is still going on and they're performing well, you just need to make sure they continue. And then, you know, one of the things that we do here as well is that we reward all of our employees, because we keep them on a profit sharing. So when the company does well, they do well. When the company goes down a little bit, they feel it too.
Sure.
And, I want everyone in the business to own the business. I want them to own their spot. I want them to be as educated as possible. And I think, that helps with the team. They all invest, just like we do in here as well. So instead of a 401k plan, we help them invest in what we do, and they make money that way as well. And so that keeps them interested in the industry itself, but it also brings camaraderie together as well. Because another thing that we do is, and I know this is getting off track a little bit, but every Tuesday the company buys lunch for everybody that's in the building. We all have to sit at the big long table and eat it together. It's not one of these things where you take your lunch and go to your office. And we don't talk about anything business. We just talk about life in general.
Well, that's a wonderful, you hear about the book, you know, Never Eat Alone. Well, you know, if you also eat together, and then if you also put your phones down so that you're not distracted, you know, that's some good quality time, whether it's your employees, which actually tend to be your family, right? You're maybe not your blood family, but when we were talking earlier about your entrepreneurial journey, some of the things you're describing about the inner workings of how you run your business, you're giving your team an opportunity to be intrapreneurial, which is being entrepreneurial in the confines of your company. You know, they're not, you know, entrepreneurs, but they are employees of you, but you're giving them some creativity and freedom. And so when everyone comes together and is bound by that, now all of a sudden there becomes this, you know, energy and momentum.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that we want all of our team members to do is to come up with their own answers. You cannot, first of all, the team has to know what the final destination is, even though they have a specific job to do. But everyone in the building needs to know what the final destination is. Otherwise, they'll never be able to make decisions on their own. And at the same time, you have to allow them to make mistakes and not have to worry about, oh, if I make a mistake, I'm going to, you know, it's all going to come crashing down on me. That way you build a great team that loves to continue to learn and to grow with inside your business.
Yes. Because they have the freedom to realize if I do, you know, have a little bit of it doesn't go with the way that I planned, boy, we're going to learn from it. Yeah. You know, I often say, you know, you either win or you, and people go lose. And it's like, no, it's not win or you lose. You win or you learn. Because if you make that little bit of a hiccup, you learn from it. And I think that's a really powerful piece. So, you know, you talked about some of the, you know, lessons learned in your past. We could probably highlight about 312 other ones. If you're like me and most other people, how does faith play a role in you perceiving that as you go through it, as well as looking back on it?
Well, my hardest time and the second failure was in 2008 when the crash happened. You being in that mortgage industry, you understand what had happened at that point. I had, at that time, I was not self-employed. I was running a branch office for a company out of Coral Gables, Florida. And this was in the commercial loan business. It was the best job I've had in my life. I had an expense account. I had, salary plus commission. I was making more money than I'd ever made. And then the rug was pulled out from under us with the collapse of the mortgage industry. I had to file for personal bankruptcy, even though both our cars, my wife and my car, were paid off. We didn't go out and buy the big house. We stayed somewhat modest. But, you know, you go to a quarter of what your income was, and it hurts. I put my faith in God's hands, and I said, you know, God will help me out. I put it in his hands. At the same time, you don't sit back and wait for God to fix it. You still have to do it.
Right.
But you can still be, led to the right people. If you pray about it, it happens. And it's amazing how that happens.
Now, I agree.
Some people will say it's your faith in God. Some people will just say that, hey, when you put your mind to it, whether you're spiritual or not, if you're focusing in on it, it's going to happen. Either way, I use my Christian beliefs to go that route versus the other way. But, the mind is a very powerful thing as well.
Yes. And you know what? God created us with that mind, and our faith is activated when we get into action. And yes, having that, you know, focus and that the dedication, all those are attributes. Those are wonderful attributes. Well, you know, we don't just have this remote that says, oh God, I'm praying and help me. And no, we have to say, listen, guide me and give me this open door and help me to perceive with wisdom this next step. And we have to go out there and roll our sleeves up and work. Otherwise, you know, we're not taking our own fate into our own destiny. I remember years ago, someone saying you have to be an active participant in your own rescue.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You can't sit back and wait for stuff to happen. You have to put yourself in a position to achieve and to be successful. And is there luck involved? Absolutely, there is. But if you don't put yourself in a position to be available when that lucky streak happens, that meeting that you didn't think you were going to have, you have to be prepared for it.
Well, typically, luck is when preparation meets opportunity.
Right.
You know, you're out there working hard, and then something happens. Well, it wouldn't happen if you hadn't been prepared or out there getting her done. So call it luck if you want, but it's really just being diligent.
You know, as much as I hated what happened then, and I ended up, I'm in an industry. I was at an age where it was very difficult for me to find any kind of employment in that field because the business had shrunk to about 25% of its original size. Hmm. And I was, middle management sales. There wasn't a lot of sales going on. The people that were interviewing me for jobs wouldn't hire me. And in my opinion, it was because I had more experience than them.
Yep.
And it was intimidating for them as well. But I ended up getting the last thing I had to do. I borrowed $2,700 from my parents, and it's sad when you're just turned 50 and you're having to borrow money from your parents. But I borrowed $2,700 and I got my commercial driver's license because I read an article that they had a shortage of long haul truck drivers, and they didn't care how old you were or what kind of experience you had. They just needed butts in the seats. And when I started, I was making about $28,000 a year driving this truck. And within a year and a half, I was making $85,000 a year driving the truck. And again, it's putting, number one, having a personality, keeping a good head on your shoulders, and getting the opportunities that are available to you.
And not turning your nose up at something that wasn't in your wheelhouse.
Nope. I tell you what, it taught me a lot. And again, very humbled. I did what I needed to do to, make the house payments, keep food on the plate for my wife. She hadn't worked outside of the home in 13 years, so it was very difficult for her to find work as well. But it all worked out.
And yep. Yep. Keep plugging away. So let's think about something, Bill. I think this is really important. Think about some key attributes that people need to manage so that they overcome these kind of issues in their life, personally and professionally. Because guess what? Did Bill Fairman cause the economic crisis of 2008, 9, 10, 11, 12? Of course not. But you had to persevere through it. So what are some of those key attributes that you found from your experience that people need to just make sure they have instilled in their life?
Well, the biggest thing that got me into doing what I'm doing now is to make sure that while you're making money, find a way to turn some of that active income into passive income. I would have never had to been a truck driver if I'd have taken that 401k of mine, and instead of investing in it, if I would have invested in some passive real estate income, even though the market was down, we had a crash. But one thing that never crashed were rentals. People still had to have a place to live. So most rental portfolios actually went up. And I don't mean in value specifically, because the values of the properties went down, but the income produced from those properties continued to go up because more and more people needed a place to live because they were losing their homes. And so rents were going up. If I would have done that, I would have never had to drive the truck in the first place. That's it.
Yes.
Perseverance and having patience and understanding that things happen. There's black swan events that happen all the time. You can control your own destiny. It may not happen right away, but be patient. It will happen. And it took you know, a good 3-4 years before, you know, we turned the corner and I got into a position to take advantage of the economy versus being a victim of it.
Yeah. Well, that's a big piece, is that's a great lesson learned. You know, we go through those hard times and we've realized, okay, these are the things that have now been instilled in me. Here's what I would change. So now moving forward, here's how I can turn that into even more success. And now, you know, that ties right into now your focus with Carolina Capital Management. So tell us a little bit about how you've turned some of those challenges you overcame into what you're doing currently and how you serve your clients.
Well, the short story is that while I was in the mortgage business, I brought my sister in. She's also very entrepreneurial, and she wanted to learn the mortgage business. This was prior to the crash. She started her own mortgage company, which failed during the crash. During that time, went to seminary. And so I'm driving a truck. She's in seminary. She was also a licensed real estate broker in two states. And as soon as she got out of seminary, a fellow that she used to be a partner with in the mortgage business had a real estate education company, and he needed someone to help him buy these FHA foreclosures, and he needed a licensed realtor. So she went to work for him, kind of in a part-time position, but turned into a full-time position quickly. We had friends and people that we knew that had self-directed retirement accounts that they needed to invest the money somewhere. And we knew people that needed loans, and we would put the two together and we would get a fee for brokering the two. And that's how we started our business. We were providing hard money loans to the fellow that ran this education business to his students. And it took off from there. We were in a position where banks would not lend to businesses at the time because of the restrictions on having enough reserves. Yep. So they were doing virtually no small business lending. So we kind of did that using other people's, you know, retirement funds. At some point it continued to grow. We moved from one little office that had three people in it, a single office, to an office with a conference room and five other offices. Then we ended up buying our own building. We outgrew that. We bought another building and we started an investment fund. So instead of having these little IRAs that we were brokering to other people, we started a fund that would be much more beneficial to the investor. Because when you're doing individual private loans for folks, you're putting a large chunk of change into one single asset. And while even if it goes south, it doesn't mean you're losing money, but you're certainly not getting your payments till you figure out what the disposition is. If you can pool everybody's money and spread it out over a couple of hundred loans at a time, the likelihood of anybody having a little bit of a downturn is very low. And one of the things that I said I was passionate about was making sure that you can convert your active income into passive income. That's how we do that in the fund. We allow people to invest in this fund. They get passive income. They can either get the income or they can roll it over and allow it to compound over time. I'm a big believer in being the bank on the bank side, because when you're lending on a property, you're not nearly as invested in the property as the person that owns it. Mm-hmm. The person that owns the property is the one that has all the risk. They have the insurance to worry about, the wear and tear on the property with the tenants, or if you're fixing a property up to sell it, you have the risk of not having it finished in a timely manner. Things that come up in the meantime, but when you're the lender on it, you can control the asset without being responsible for the asset.
Yeah. That's a big, it even goes beyond being the landlord. You know, you're the one holding the paper.
Correct. It's a beautiful thing. when I teach this to folks, I teach them two different ways. They can either do the loans themselves, which is fine. A lot of people like playing the game. I get it. But if you're in a position to be an accredited investor, wouldn't it be great just to hand somebody your money and then have it work for you, and you don't have to do the hardest work you do is looking at your statement each month or each quarter and seeing how much money that you make, or getting an ACH to your account, and knowing that you're not ever touching the balance as you grow. That's one of the things that I hate about the financial services industry in general. They teach you about retirement. You have to save up a certain amount of money, and then when it's time for you to retire, you have to make sure you have enough money that you can die. You need to die before you run out.
Yeah, who can time that perfectly?
And if you're investing in real estate, whether in real property or in notes or in funds, as long as it's tied to real estate, what you're trying to accomplish is that not only are you living off of the balance, but you're hoping that you can grow that balance as well, so you have something to leave your family.
Yes.
And leave a legacy as well.
Yeah, I was literally thinking of the word legacy. That's so that you're living off of the money, but it's replenishing because of how it's working for you.
Correct.
So in your lending, in your Carolina Capital Management, are you working with people that need the money, or are you working with investors? You know, like, yes, they need the money, but are you working also with, like, developers, you know, or both sides of the equation?
Yeah, it's funny. The old bank adage is, I can't lend you this money because you actually need it.
Yep, exactly.
So we work with our borrowers are experienced real estate investors who on the single family housing side are either in it to fix up a house to sell, or they're going to build one from the ground up to sell, or they're buying a property that they want to rent out, but it still needs work. Mm-hmm. So they're fixing that up, and then they're going to refinance it instead of selling it. And then the same thing with ground up construction. There's a lot of ground up construction for rental properties now. We also work with people that are buying apartment complexes that are either aged or were mismanaged. They buy them. We call it getting them stabilized. So they're fixing them up. They're bringing the rents up to market value, and then they'll refinance our loan out. Our loans are all short term. That's another thing I love about my industry, or at least my space, is that we don't have any long term contracts that we're tied into. They're all short term. Same thing with self-storage. We like to stay in the recession-resistant real estate space. That was another thing I learned about from the crash. I'm trying to stay in the space that is the most liquid out of all the real estate spaces.
Yep. Least volatility possible.
You have to have a place to live. In any economy, you need two things, food and shelter. As Americans, we're a little bit different about our stuff, though. This is why self-storage is so great. I have people that have $500 worth of junk, and they'll spend 3 to 5 years paying $150 a month for their $500 worth of stuff.
Yeah.
We get emotionally tied to
our stuff. Yep. And so when you're talking about the construction and things like that, these are loans that are pretty complicated. And if you went to the traditional bank or lender or credit union, it's a lot of paperwork and time and qualification. And so do you do something to cut through that clutter and make it a little bit easier to access?
Certainly. We still do our due diligence on the borrowers. We pull credit just like the bank. We
sure.
Require reserves just like the bank. And we require that they have experience and all their corporate docs are in place and all that. However, yes, we do make it a lot easier and a lot faster. I mean, we've closed loans in 7 days. When you're in the real estate game, it's all about how quickly can I get this thing acquired and get started on it? a lot of real estate investors would bring in partners that had the money. They would provide the work, but then they'd split half the proceeds with the investor. If you're borrowing the money, you're paying not anywhere close to half the proceeds. Frankly, as a hard money or private money lender, you are paying a higher interest rate. Assuming though, let's say, for example, it's a 10% interest rate. It's interest only. Let's say it's a 6-month loan. Well, if you're paying 10% and you're only paying 6 payments, you're actually only paying 5% interest.
Yeah. What does it matter? Exactly.
It's not really high.
Yeah.
But as a lender, I want them to pay this loan off every 6 months because then I can make another loan to somebody else.
Yes. Like turning tables at a restaurant.
Yep. Yep. And listen, we do several things very well. We are helping small businesses get the funding they need to do their business. And these would be the real estate investors. We are helping people that want to retire and have their money protect their capital preserved, as well as make as much or more than the inflation rate, obviously. So they don't have to touch the principal and they can live off it at some point. And then we're helping neighborhoods that were distressed get better through those borrowers. And at the same time, that's going to make us profitable as well. So if you do right by the borrower, you do right by the investor, you can't help but win.
If you're treating everyone with high ethics and quality products and services, everybody wins. I want to dive in just a little bit deeper here as we wrap up on the safety and protection for the investor. So you really laid it out well for the borrower wanting to do a project, maybe a construction or a fix and flip. They need funds and you're going to help them with that. For the developer that wants to put a project together, apartment complex, wonderful. What about the investor that says, you know, I've got some self-directed retirement funds, maybe through my IRA or something like that, and I want to put it to use here. What protections do they have? Is their name on the one of the lien holders on the deed so that if something went crazy in the world, that they at least know that their name is protected and their investment is protected? What are some of those features that you provide investors?
Well, if you're in the fund, that would be no. But the fund is set up differently. The fund is an investor-owned LLC. So when you become a member of the fund, you are an owner of the fund.
Okay.
We just manage the fund. We don't own the fund at all. We're just Carolina Capital Management manages the fund. And so you get a K-1 at the end of the year, but all those loans, yes, are the deeds are in the name of the fund. So you are part owner, but it is part owner in shares, not necessarily
not deeds of trust.
That's correct.
But what you just described, that sounds to me unique in the sense that if you think of hedge fund in the traditional sense, you put money in this hedge fund, you're not an owner of that hedge fund. So does that ownership of the LLC, is that unique in your industry and give a little bit more comfort and protection to the investors?
Well, in our industry, generally, there's two ways to invest in a similar, we call them mortgage pool funds. There's two ways to invest. You can invest as a debt member, meaning it's similar to buying a CD that you would be in it for 2, 3, 5 years, guaranteed return. And at the end of that 5 years, you're getting all your money back plus the interest that you earn. Or you can be an equity owner, meaning just like what we were talking about, you can own the LLC and you're getting the profits. There's nothing guaranteed, but at the end of every quarter, we scrape all the expenses. Whatever profits left over gets distributed out to all the investors. And our particular fund is equity investors only. We have no debt members. Like I said, it's a beautiful concept. When you invest in a stock or a hedge fund, no, you don't get those same benefits.
Right. You just got to trust that it's going to not be too volatile. So I tell you what, Bill. Oh, go ahead.
real quick, you have to be an accredited investor to get into our fund. And if you're not an accredited investor, we also will sell some of the notes that are in the fund to help recapitalize the fund. So even if you're not an accredited investor, we still have notes or pieces of notes where you can be assigned a stream of income that's coming in off those notes.
Neat. So a lot of options. You know, it's been neat to hear your journey. You know, we started talking about your entrepreneurial journey, but then the journey of some choppiness and lessons learned, and then how that's really catapulted you to this new, you know, focus. You kind of came full circle. It makes me think of something here. What would you say, having learned these lessons and solidified your purpose in personal and professional life, what is your why? What is it that really gets you jazzed to deliver the results you do for your clients?
Yeah. The whole reason I'm doing this was, we go back to that when I'm sitting there in that tractor trailer truck looking at the 401k that I did not cash out because it was my retirement funds. I didn't want to cash it out for two reasons. One, I didn't want to have to pay the penalties and the tax on it. Number two, you're not supposed to dive out of the market when it's down. You're supposed to ride it for a while. But in this case, I lost half of the value of my 401k in the first year. If I would have invested that money differently, I would have had not only not gone down in value, but it would be continuing to add value and income. So my goal in life is to try and teach as many people as possible that the stock market isn't the game that the financial experience tells you it is.
Yeah.
The way you save for retirement is broken. You can't save up enough money to live off of. We live too long. There are a lot of people that can get rich in the stock market, but you gain wealth in the real estate business. And I hate that you're having to, that you have to save enough money and hope that you die before you run out. That's not the way it should be. And it's really not rocket science. And listen, most people don't have the time or the network to do what we do on their own. And they need help from other people.
And the other thing that makes me think of this is, I don't know one end of a hammer from the other. So I hear these stories about fix and flip, and that's wonderful for those people. Doesn't interest me. And I hear the horror stories about being a landlord and getting the toilets overflowing and getting the calls in the middle of the night. That doesn't interest me. But you're providing another opportunity for people to participate in real estate without having those skill sets or encumbrances.
Right. The responsibility of ownership and the headaches of ownership. And frankly, when you get to that, we'll call it that freedom number. Do you really want to spend all your time messing around with this? Don't you want to be actually free?
Yep, exactly.
To enjoy more time with your family and friends.
Exactly. Well, I love it. I love how we've come full circle and your passion and your purpose. So let's wrap up with this, Bill. What's if someone is listening to this going, tell me a little bit more. It sounds interesting enough to you know, learn a little bit. How can people learn a little bit more about what you do and then reach out and connect with you?
Absolutely. The first thing that I would do, there's actually two ways to reach me. CarolinaHardMoney.com. And then you can click on the accredited investor page, or this is actually the best way to do it. BillFairman.com. That's my personal page. It has everything we need to talk about with to schedule a call. And we call it the Be the Bank call, whether you want to invest in our fund or whether you want to learn about how to invest in notes. Even if you're not ready to invest, I'm happy to take time to go over what all is involved in these things and point you in the right direction.
Well, Bill, thank you so much for your transparency. We've learned a lot. I love the journey you've been on, and I really appreciate your time coming on today.
Well, it's a pleasure, Mike. I appreciate you having me on.
You've been listening to Influential Entrepreneurs with Mike Saunders. To learn more about the resources mentioned on today's show or listen to past episodes, visit www.influentialentrepreneursradio.com.